You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to an I Guess Alabama Does Have a Fiddle in the Band edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Just like that lead guitar, the temperature, not the tide, was blazing hot in Austin. But in the end, it was ice water in the veins that allowed the tide to escape with the wind on what ended up being a prospective realignment day in college football. Just ask Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Florida, Nebraska, Baylor, what we really mean by that, and certainly if they would be willing to change positions with us in our lackluster win. But we know the answer to that question, and we know that that metric, that measure, is not our standard. So let's do what we do. Here we go. Offense, you're up. Yep, yep, there you go, there you go. Now ease off the clutch, put it in, let's try it again. There you go. You know what, by the fourth quarter, you'll have this nailed. All right, here we go. We're going to talk offense, and we're going to start how we do, like we do, with Bryce. And we're going to talk about Bryce like we talk about Will Anderson, in that his performance was significantly better than his numbers. They weren't bad numbers. They just weren't superstar, stellar, outstanding numbers that we typically see from Bryce. Bryce puts up a big performance, and his numbers show it. Saturday, Bryce put up a tremendous performance, and his numbers, they weren't quite that sparkly. Let's take a look at them. Overall, Bryce was 27 of 39. That's a just shy of a 70% completion percentage. So that's nice. Nothing shameful there. He had 213 yards. That's a low number for Bryce. We've seen Bryce, you know, top 300 on the reg. We've seen Bryce top 400. At 213, his average attempt was 5.5 yards. That's pretty pedestrian, especially with what we've seen the last couple of years with those downfield threats where we would connect, Alabama would connect on larger passes. However, in the fourth quarter, Bryce was 15 of 19, just shy of 80%. He had 11 completions in a row at one point, and he threw for, in the fourth quarter, 136 yards. That's 64% of his total yardage, 213 in the fourth quarter. Sandwiched in between the first and fourth quarter were sort of yuckiness, terrible Oreo cookie. It was just abysmal, two scoreless quarters. There was a stretch where Alabama punted six straight possessions. It was terrible, but the fourth quarter was absolutely outstanding. Two scoring drives, 10 points, and as bad as it was, some of what we saw in the fourth quarter was absolutely brilliant. Two plays, none better on the day than Bryce's two plays contributing or leading to the scores. He rolled out under pressure, backpedaled, threw a laser to Jahmyr Gibbs for the touchdown. And then on the second-to-last Alabama offensive play, Bryce did his best duck, dip, dodge imitation to elude a defender, 20-yard gain that set up the Will Reichert game-winning, what ended up being the game-winning field goal. That was Bryce just playing like a point guard, playing with that ice water in his veins, absolutely. Without question. The game, this Texas game was about Bryce on one hand. On the other hand, it wasn't about Bryce. This was almost, referendum is really a strong word, but it almost was a referendum for the rest of the team. It set a laser-like vision for what is needed from the rest of the team to play to Bryce's standard, who is playing to the Alabama standard. So let's break this down. We're going to do this similar but different. We're going to go through position groups. We'll name individuals. We'll name players. But we're going to do a little bit of dissection on some of this and talk about where we looked bad, but where it can clean up. And we're going to go sort of position group by position group in that regard. So the running game, you know, Jace had an 81 yarder, which was outstanding. In fact, I will say that from a health perspective, coming back from his knee injury perspective, I didn't think he had that in him, frankly, that type of breakaway speed. I thought last year, pre-injury, he looked really good, and I'm a big fan of McClellan, so don't hear me say anything different from that. But his sophomore season, I thought he had bulked up a little bit and maybe lost some of the speed that he had as a true freshman. That's what my eyes told me. And coming back from a knee injury, I suspected that he might even lose a step over what he demonstrated last year. Well, color me wrong. He had an 80-yarder his freshman season, and Saturday against Texas, he had an 81-yarder. So it was his longest career run. Otherwise, however, Jace was 5 of 16, or 5 carries for 16 yards. So just over 3 a carry, a little bit of pedestrian there after his breakout run. We're super excited about that breakout run. Every point that Alabama scored was material to the outcome of the game, and certainly that long touchdown was as well. Jahmyr Gibbs, for my money, was a little bit of a mixed bag, although he's electric, and we see spark every time he touches the ball. As a runner, he was 9 of 22. And so clearly, 2 weeks in a row, I think the defense is keen off of Jahmyr Gibbs. So he only had an average of 2.4. We're going to talk about Gibbs again when we get to the passing game. But he did have 9 receptions for 74 yards with a critical touchdown. And so we love the performance that Gibbs provides. And we absolutely love the versatility that he is demonstrating. Saban talks about tight ends and running backs as sort of X factors or mismatch players in the passing game. And boy, did Jahmyr Gibbs live up to that and certainly demonstrate that with 9 receptions, 74 yards, and a critical touchdown. Roydell Williams, absolutely, it was good to see him in there, but he absolutely was maybe a little bit curious when he came in on a 4th-and-1. But I looked at it as that may – Roydell Williams, I think, is probably our most physical running back, although he's not a big sort of bruising running back. And I thought there was enough sort of, Alabama may be trying to run something here because they're bringing in Jahmyr Gibbs. They're bringing in Roydell Williams, you know, maybe their third string running back. So they're not going to run with their third string running back. They're going to pass. And so I think that created some opportunity because Roydell, I think, is just a notch below the first two guys in terms of his talent. And for my money, he missed the hole. He ran up behind the center, got caught up in the center's legs, but the hole was right there on the right side between Ekior and Dalcourt. And if he had just hit the hole, just tagged the hole, it would have been a clear first down. But he ran up behind the center, got tripped up in the center's legs. That extra step out, then to hit the hole, that allowed the linebacker to collapse and sort of fit the fill or cover his gap. And again, if Roydell had just, you know, heads down, you know, attacked the hole with a vengeance, then he would have gotten 2 yards. It would have been very clear. First down, Alabama. And a lot happened after that play. That was a 4th down. Alabama's trying to ice the game up by 1 in that situation. Could have kicked a field goal to go up by 4. Saban talked about he wanted to sort of shrink the game, not sort of force Texas to, what I'm reading between the lines, not really force Texas to have to be aggressive and score a touchdown, but maybe go down, kick a field goal, and then give Alabama time. That's exactly what happened. So when we didn't make that, Texas then took the lead, and then Alabama came back with just enough time to have an opportunity to kick a field goal to win the game. So that 4th down was critical. Alabama would have had a fresh set of downs. At that point, could have run out the clock with the lead. And it was about at the 25-yard line. And so certainly within field goal range, kick that field goal with you know, maybe a minute less on the clock, or go in for a touchdown and really just put the game away. And so that's what we needed. That's what Alabama needed in that spot. And you hit the hole, you get that. And, you know, you get that first down, I think, pretty easily. And so I'm piling on a little bit, not with mean-spirited, but as Alabama fans, we've got to go back and sort of critically watch that play. And if he just puts his head right in that hole, it's a two-yard game. It's game over with a lot less sort of heart palpitations in the meantime. The offensive line, there's issues there. But I think they're all imminently correctable. There's a gap issues, and we saw this some last year, and then it got better. And we're seeing it again this year. Now the A gap is the two holes between the guards, and so there's guard, center, guard, and so at the center there's the right A gap to the right guard, and there's left A gap to the left guard. But that whole sort of guard to guard where the center is, guard to guard, that's the A gap or A gaps, if you will. And so Alabama struggled with A gap protection all day. And for a little bit, I want to be careful here because I'm a thread and needle. We predicted it, but we didn't predict it, if that makes sense. On the podcast, we did not explicitly call out that Alabama is going to have an issue at the A gap, that it's going to have the line is going to struggle in the middle of the line. We didn't explicitly say it that way, but I'll tell you what we did predict. We did predict that the starting players at left guard would be Kendall Randolph, but we thought by game two or three or four, we'd see Javon Cohen return to that position. And then we predicted that the coaching offensive line would have Darian Dalcourt at the center, and we predicted by games three, four, the end of the season, we would see Seth McLaughlin retake that position, where he played very, very well late last season. So in the game, in the Texas game, we saw Javon Cohen come in and take that left guard position. And so my suspicion is that that's his position now. We predicted that he would overtake his starting role, and we may have seen that Saturday. So we'll see how the roster plays out. And then we have predicted, again, in our offensive pregame preseason show, we predicted that a couple games in, Seth McLaughlin would come in and overtake the center position. And Darian Dalcourt has all the measurables. He's taller. He's heavier. He's probably, you know, bigger and stronger than Seth. But I think, you know, and we have observation of this. We saw this last season when Seth came in, the offensive line just settled down. And even going against bigger, stronger, more physical players, Seth held his own. He played well. He didn't shrink in the moment, physically or sort of emotionally, if you will. And the offensive line as a whole stabilized. We think he was better at making the calls and you know, adjusting the protections and such, which a center has responsibility for. I think Dalcourt potentially could move to a center or to a guard and be very effective because physically he can do it. I don't want to say mentally he can't do it because that has a connotation, but there's a lot more responsibility at the center position than there is a guard position. And so I think that extra load taxes Darian in a way that Seth is built for. So we'll see how this next week unfolds, what the offensive line looks like. Again, I'm not saying that we predicted it, but in some sense we did. We knew that there would have to be bumps in the road for the players to change, and we thought there'd be a 40% turnover in the starting offensive line within sort of the first month of the season, and we may have seen sort of the first such transition on Saturday. But they get protections. There were sacks. Bryce was hit very hard on a number of plays, and certainly some rushed passes. We were so glad to see Cameron Latu back. We think he's going to be a big contributor at the tight end position. He had a couple of key passes, but one of the plays that will not get spoken to, it'll just be lost in history. And you had to go back and really look at it. One play, Bryce was under duress, and he threw off his back foot. And who was he throwing to? He was throwing downfield. A lot of say, how many passes do we attempt downfield? One of the passes we attempted downfield was Bryce throwing to an open. Now, I won't say wide open, but he had a step. He was ahead of the defender. And had Bryce had an opportunity to set his feet and place the ball, as we know that he can, that would have been a big play for Alabama, 25-plus yards. But as it was, thrown off his back foot, under duress, it was underthrown, and it was an incomplete pass. So, again, you know, pressure in the middle. Sometimes it's sacks. Sometimes it's bad throws. It's called affecting the quarterback, just like Saban says. And we saw that type of pressure coming from the A-gap. I can guarantee you, write this down 100%. Every team we play the rest of the season, they knew that we might be susceptible there based on last year. And we really weren't changing any of the players in the middle. And everyone that said, hey, we're going to test that when we play them, they said, yep, there it is again. We see that weakness. And so as Alabama coaching staff, as Alabama fans, what we should root for, what we should, you know, to the extent that we can call for, is let's make the change that stabilized the line last year, but let's make it in week three as opposed to week, you know, December, you know, whatever, November, whatever that was when it was really too late for some games. So that's offensive line.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about wide receivers. Talk about a unit that sort of shriveled up in the Texas heat. That would be the Alabama wide receivers. And I'm not mad at anyone individually, but let's call out some performances. Treshawn Holden, who I really like and I still predict is going to have a breakout this season. He had a very quiet 4 receptions. Ja'Cory Brooks, who was invisible week 1 and invisible for much of week 2, he burst out with 3 catches all in the second half. I'd have to go back and sort of drive him out, but it seems like maybe they were all or most late in the third, early fourth. He had 2 13, 14-yard receptions back-to-back. I think that was during the 11 completion cycle, so he was instrumental in helping us move the ball. I think we've got to find a role for Ja'Cory. Kobe Prentice, the true freshman last week that really sort of burst on the seams, I think he sort of had a tremendous step forward last week. I think he had a little bit of a step back. Now he had 4 receptions, but he missed the read on a route. When the defensive end or linebacker, you know, steps in, then the receiver needs to sit down in his route. And he continued to run. And Bryce threw that ball about a yard behind him, whereas if he had just sat down in the route, it would have been a completion. Whereas it wasn't really a drop. It was just an incompletion because his body relative to where the ball went, there was just a yard of differential. And if he had sat down in the route, he would have remained open. The ball would have been delivered. It would have helped us move the chains, which is what we needed. Now, that's a young receiver that can go back and watch that film and watch it again and watch it again and sit with coaches and sit with Bryce and sit with the other receivers. And he'll pick that up. But it's a type of performance. And we've said this before, and we say this a lot with offensive linemen because sort of the image is more, you know, visceral. If you want to get a holding call, it's going to happen. But not everyone gets one. Not everyone gets a holding call. And so what you want to do is not get a holding call. So if someone else has one, we're not giving up 5 plays here. And so it's like that, you know, you don't want to miss a route because miss routes are going to happen, but not everyone gets one. That's 6 or 7 different, you know, drop passes or missed, you know, completions. And some of those are critical third downs. And so Kobe had his. Let's get that corrected and let's not do that again. And I think we'll see progression there. Jermaine Burton had a very, very quiet two receptions. I still think he can be the lead receiver for the for this unit, and would have hoped, expected to see him step up. I think he has a leadership role. I think he has some talent, certainly some skill set. And so he's a player that didn't step up in a way that we would like. There's a little bit, this is a little bit of seesaw. There's a little bit, I can talk about Burton, but you know, reality is Bryce was under duress a number of times. And maybe when he was breaking open, there was the duress. Maybe there was the sack when Burton was going to be open. And so there's a little bit of sort of yin and yang on that. I'm not mad at any of the individuals, but you know, those things happen. We talk about Cam getting loose on what would have been a big game. And we had leakage across the offensive line that allowed us to not complete that pass. That's not Cam's fault. And some of these receivers are going to fall into that category or fall into that boat as well. Now, Isaiah Bond, he just flat dropped a pass. And true freshman out there, that's going to happen. But not everyone gets one. Kobe had one. Isaiah had one. Hey, that's two. That's two. We don't need two. And at least one was on a third down, maybe two. And we don't – this. That's not what we're going for here. That's not what we need. Gibbs, we did talk about him. He had 9 for 74 with a critical game winning. It wasn't the field goal that won the game, but it was a critical touchdown at a critical point at a critical point in the game. It gave us the lead back. Again, Texas, you know, did what they did, and we were able to come back and kick the field goal. And again, there's good in this, right? Alabama did complete. Bryce Young did complete 11 straight passes in the fourth quarter, and so there's a little bit of, hey, this Alabama team is not the 80s Lakers where, you know, they can just decide to turn it on in the playoffs. That's not what this team is. And so they're going to, this team, this unit is going to have to bootstrap it like Bryce did. And I think overall, we tighten up a couple of things across the offensive line, which we're potentially seeing some personnel shifts there. And these wide receivers come out not believing their press after the Utah State game, but recognizing what they need to go to work to do every day based on the Texas game. And this Alabama offense can get right. Now, we talked about execution, and we have some other sort of execution points. I want to be careful talking about play calling because there's a lot that can go into that. And then a play can be called, but then the execution of that play, we talked about this with the run with Roydell. It was the great call. It was perfectly executed by everyone except for, you know, a singular individual. And so, is that a bad play call? No, I don't think it is at all. It's execution. So let's talk about sort of that grab bag of those sort of interspersed topics. The fourth quarter offense was different. It was built different. It executed different. It played different. There was an urgency. And so that, whatever sort of you could distill that down into, the team needs to do that the first three quarters of the game. And I think that's effort, that's execution, and maybe it is a little bit of play calling. Maybe it is what we did in the fourth quarter. Maybe those are not the same, not all of the same plays that we called the rest of the game. So we need to think about that. We need to self scout on that. The wide receiver screens. I'm not mad at a wide receiver screen as a play call. It's sort of a staple of the Bob offense, but sometimes it was the execution. I don't think it was necessarily a bad play call, but it was the execution of it. Because we've seen, you know, Ruggs and Jalen and Jerry Judy and Devonta, we've seen them be very successful with the wide receiver screen. So I don't think it's a bad play. I don't think it's a bad concept. What I saw was some really subpar execution. There was one play in particular. You know, we've got the two wide receivers lined out wide. There's a defender sort of man on each of them, and so it's sort of a two by two, if you will, two wide receivers, two defenders. Now, technically, I'm going to say that one of the receivers, the one farthest from or the one closer to the middle of the field, the inside receiver, they're both lined out wide, but the inside receiver needs to step off the line of scrimmage, so he's not covered up, so he's still an eligible receiver. But for the sake of discussion, you know, they're two by two, and so one of, and in fact, it was the inside receiver that was blocking, and so he went out to block, and the outside receiver stepped back behind the line of scrimmage, you know, to get the screen. Now, that's sort of the design of it. That's okay. Now, what I didn't like is when you're in this 2x2, it's sort of man-to-man, right? It presents visually as man-to-man. And you know it's a quick striking play. And you know it's 2-on-2. And so the receiver not catching the ball, his objective should be, how do I tie up just for a hair, just for a split second, just for a heartbeat? How do I tie up both of these wide receivers? And I didn't go back and get names because I'm not trying to pick on individual players, but the inside receiver did not, the execution of the play was not even in his mindset. He rushed out and blocked the man that was on him, leaving the man that was on the other receiver unabated to the receiver that's sort of taken a step back to catch the ball. And so it was a 2-yard loss. And of course it's going to be a 2-yard loss because there's no effort made. There's no attention to, I got to try to hold up both of these guys. And you do that. It's just a simple concept. Don't go out and just try to block the man that's head up over you. Go cut across his body and try to block the other guy, or cut across his body and sort of run a rub route. And then the guy that's on you is going to react to you. And the guy that's going to block, that's on the other receiver, he has to, because you fronted him out, you faced him. And so he has to react to you. And again, and then the receiver that's catching the screen steps back, catches the ball, and then he runs under all of that. And if he can get around it, then he's got space to run. That's the design of the play. And the execution was, oh, I'm going to block my guy, and I guess he's on his own and his other guy. Well, then that's just poor execution. So the play design was there. The execution was atrocious. That's imminently fixable. Like, I'm explaining how to fix that. Do you think the coaches can't explain how to fix that? And certainly that's not how it was designed. It was not executed to its design. In no way should any of us believe that. And so we're going to see stuff like that cleaned up. And we're going to see that play 5 or 6 times this next week. Watch for sort of the 2x2 sort of setup and how we run it and how we execute against that. And I almost guarantee that it'll be much improved. We've talked about the A-gap issue across the offensive line. I think we're one half of the way to correcting that. That's not mad, me not being mad at Kendall Randolph at all, but I think we know that Javon Cohen is the better guard. He started at the position last year, and so we think he's going to be back in that position. And it will be interesting to see what happens across the offensive line. And look, we don't need, I want to be careful how I say this, I want us to be a stone wall and just completely stone out the defensive line. I mean, of course we would want that. But you know what we need? We need a couple of half seconds here or there. That pass to Cam, half a second, and that's a completed ball. So we need a couple of half seconds. We don't need a wall. We don't need a curtain that just blocks out the defensive lineman. I'll take it. Of course, we all will. But what we really need is a couple of half seconds so that we can complete some of these passes. And then what we also need is a little bit of personnel. And again, I'm not mad at our wide receivers, but Tyler Harrell, who's coming off an injury from camp, there's rumor, speculation that he might be back this next week, which I think would be significant. We need someone that can stretch the field. And stretching the field is, you know, vertically is two components. The offensive line, you can have the fastest receiver in the world, you know, running nines all game long. You're going to have 3 Jamison Williams back, all running nines. But if the offensive line doesn't give the quarterback time to set and throw that pass, then it doesn't matter. And so what we need is a little bit – we talk about these half seconds. We need a little bit of improvement across the offensive line, and then we need to run these nines. We need to release the hounds on some of these downfield passes. I think Tyler Harrell, if he comes back and he's to form, I think he gives us a little bit of that. I'm going to say, you know, Saban always says, never waste a loss. And I'm going to paraphrase that a little bit. Never waste a hair of your chinny chin chin win. And that's what this Alabama offense needs to do. Everything that we've talked about here is frustrating and it's mind numbing. And it almost costs us the game. But by golly, it's all fixable. Everything I saw was fixable. It's a little bit of experience. It's a little bit of guys, buckle down, do your job, do what you're supposed to do. And if everyone contributes just a little bit, that's all we need. It's just a little bit of correction. Catch that ball, run the right route, block just that extra second, get the right player in there that's going to assist, execute the screen, the wide receiver screen the right way. So it's a 2-3 yard gain or potentially more, a skill player in space, right? Let's allow him to have that space. These are all fixable. And it's a handful of players that can make those corrections, and I think make a tremendous difference. Offensive mini game ball, I'm going to give that to Emil Ekior. He had sort of a critical key block on Jace's 81-yard touchdown run, and so mini game ball to Emil Ekior in that regard.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's flip the field like we do and talk defense. I'm going to tell you, if the Tide's offense is a puppy that needs to be house trained, then the Tide defense is a bipolar patient that is off their meds. And, you know, analogies can still be funny. Bijan Robinson, let's run through some of this, right? Why would I say such a thing? Bijan Robinson, arguably the best running back in college football, was held to 57 yards on 21 carries. That's a 2.7 average. That's Leonard Fournette territory, right? That's Leonard Fournette territory when we would absolutely shut him down. The Tide defense, and so that's outstanding. That's a great performance. However, Alabama had 15 penalties. 10 of those penalties were on defense. 7 of those 10 penalties on defense were on drives where Texas scored. Texas had 4 scoring drives. Alabama had 7. I'm going to help you with easy ones, right? Alabama had 7 penalties on Texas's 4 scoring drives. And it was just as you would math it out. 2, 2, 1, and 2 were the penalty breakdown. It was 2 on 3 of them and one on another. And, you know, we can go back and look at those plays, watch those possessions, watch those drives. Those were penalties that kept those drives alive. And in a couple of instances, gave first downs that Texas may not have otherwise gotten. And I will not say that those 7 penalties contributed directly to Texas's score, but my, did they contribute indirectly. So those are things that can all be cleaned up. Will Anderson really had some bonehead penalties. He had 3 himself, every single one of those imminently correctable. And, you know, you potentially certainly make it harder for Texas to score. I honestly start to think, and it's if and nuts and candy and butts and whatever, but if you start to take away some of those penalties, you start to take away points from Texas. And what happened, happened. But it, in terms of, is it correctable? Is it fixable? Yes, it is. It's so darn correctable. It's so darn fixable. Learn the rules of when a player's down. I don't understand some of this, but it's so imminently correctable. Line up across, you know, appropriately along the line of scrimmage. And I'm picking on Will, but I'm not meaning to pick on Will. Those are just the easy, obvious ones, right? Fix that, and the defense gets better. Physical defensive play. Too much at times, because we talked about the 7 penalties. We did, I want to be careful how I say this, we did knock out 1.5 quarterbacks. We had 3 sacks. We had 3 pass deflections. We had 7 tackles for loss. We say this all the time. Say it with me. We do not root for injury. We're not trying to maim anyone. We're not trying to take anyone out of the game. We're not trying to play dirty. We're not trying to hurt anyone. Sometimes physical play leads to injury. It just does. I don't think Dallas's play on Ewers, I don't think it was dirty. It's physical as hell, but I don't think it was dirty. And so now people can argue with me. That's fine. But I don't think I think it was physical, not dirty. The physical play was outstanding Although on a couple of the pass interferences, maybe, you know, we got away with a couple and we were tagged on a couple. I think we got to use our physicality in the right places. Alabama held Texas to 3 of 12 on third down conversions. Now, the irony is there, we gave them first downs on second down that maybe we shouldn't have. But 3 of 12 on third down conversions is amazing. However, at the same time, the Alabama defense gave up almost 400 yards. We held Texas. We talked about this with Robinson. We held Texas to 79 yards rushing, a 2.4 average. That's Leonard Fournette territory for an Alabama defense. Meanwhile, at the same time, we allowed almost, or the Tide allowed almost 300 yards passing. Well, that starts to be Stephen Garcia territory. And so we can't have the both of them. We need both on the right side of the ledger. We do these things that are really, really good, and then we go out and do something that's significantly less so. So we need to get all of that sort of lined up on the right side of where the team needs to be, where we want the team to be. Xavier Worthy is a look like a Devonta Smith clone in terms of his size and frame and his tenacity for the ball. He had 5 catches for 97 yards, but after we made a change at the corner position, he had 3 catches on 6 targets, but only 29 yards. And so that was after the first quarter. And so we did something really good there. We made an adjustment and played really good in that regard. But Jordan Whittington, he picked up the slack. He had 7 catches for 64 yards, and almost nearly every bit of that after Worthy was sort of iced out. And so they said, well, we're just going to go to another receiver and make good plays. And they certainly did. So, you know, we need the balance. We need success on both fronts, not just the one. And so taken together, it's more than just a little bit exasperating that, you know, it may have contributed, may not. I've contributed to my over self-medicating on Brownwater Saturday, but it's just like, gosh, we're right there and we're giving it away. Again, fortunately, we walked out with the win. So let me call out some additional, you know, performances here. Most of these would be good. Rotation at the cornerback. That may be clarifying, although I would say interestingly so. Terron Arnold, who we thought might be sort of we thought he was the 4th of 4, and he rotated in for Kyrie Jackson, who started the game. And I thought Terron Arnold played phenomenal. McKinstry definitely can play physical. We like that. I think that's something he can dial back just a little. And you know, sometimes they'll let you play, which sometimes they did against Texas, and sometimes they didn't. And so they called him. So I think he's just got to dial that in just a little bit. Curiously, Eli Ricks didn't play, so I did not see or hear on my TV. I didn't see him. That doesn't mean he wasn't in the roster somewhere. It points in the game or on special teams, but I didn't. My TV did not register him as having played, and I'm gonna say color me surprised on that. I thought that he might have started the game ahead of Kyrie. And certainly Arnold, I thought that he might have come in for Kyrie when we made the change, and we did not. It was Terron. So that's interesting. Maybe we'll hear something this week about that. DeMarco Helms, I thought, played an outstanding game. He had 10 tackles, 8 were solo. He seemed that he was making plays all over the field. Looked like he had an injury. I don't know if it was a stinger or sort of a neck, but he came back. And so that was good. And there were a couple of times I saw Helms locked up in coverage. And I was really pleased, nervous, but then pleased to see how he acquitted himself in those situations. So DeMarco Helms, it's week 2, but he may have made a very wise decision in coming back and working on components of his game. I would say DeMarco Helms, number 2 in the secondary, keep an eye on him, because he has looked really good in 2 games. And this Texas game, I thought he looked outstanding. Jalen Moody is another player. Holy cow. He's the team leader in tackles. He had 10 tackles on the day. He had a sack. He had a tackle for loss. And so Jalen Moody is another player that is really stepping up and stepping out. He has waited and waited and waited for his opportunity at the linebacker position. It looked like it might not come. It looked like he was going to transfer out. And when Christian Harris put his name in the declared for the draft, then Jalen Moody said, okay, that's the open lane I need. I will go back and compete for that position. And he's earned it, and he is playing very well. We talked about him potentially losing that position to Deontay Lawson, and Moody is in no mood for that kind of talk. And I think he is playing very well, very physical. He's going to be an asset to this defense without question. Will Anderson, we know and love Will Anderson. You know, he's got to figure out the line of scrimmage, the rules in that regard. But he still had a productive day. He had a sack. He had two TFLs. And on special teams, which we'll talk about here in a minute, he made an outstanding play. And net, he had five tackles. I think Will Anderson is someone that offenses look for and watch out for. And Texas certainly did. And so maybe a little bit of frustration from Will's side, maybe a little bit of just anxiousness. He hadn't gotten a sack yet, and he lines up offsides because he's trying to get after him. I think he just needs to slow down, calm down. He needs to do what he would tell the next guy to do. He would tell someone not to do the things that he did. He needs to come back, take a deep breath, self-evaluate, and say, you know what, that's not my game. I'm going to go next week and play my game. And if Will plays within himself, that's all we need. That's all we need. Dallas Turner, I love the youngster. I don't like him one-on-one coverage against a running back. I think that's the mismatch that Texas was hoping for. They got it. They got a big play and a pass to Bijan Robinson. I think overall the defensive line is improving, and they will continue to do so. I think they're not going to rack up big numbers. I don't know that we're going to have sort of a sack artist from the interior, so to speak. We've sort of gotten spoiled to that. But I think the defensive front is going to continue to improve and continue to play well. Defensive mini game ball, I'm giving it to Terrion Arnold. I'm going to tell you why. When he came in, you stopped hearing Xavier Worthy's name. And when Arnold was in, you didn't hear his name. And so when you're a cornerback and you don't hear your opponent's name or your name, then you've won. You've played well. And so Terrion Arnold, mini game ball for not hearing a darn thing about his play. I know that sounds silly, but we all understand what I'm saying. All right, let's talk about special teams here. It begins and ends with Earl Reichert, not just on special teams, but on the day. 2 for 2 on his field goals, and boy, that just sounds kind of pedestrian. You know, what he was 2 for 2 on field goals, you know, when we – Utah State. But 2 for 2 on field goals had a completely different meaning against Texas. Early in the game, Will Reichert, first possession, Will Reichert went out there and hit a 52-yard field goal in hostile territory, all of the things you would want to say. He went out and nailed a 52-yarder, which is a long kick by any stretch of the imagination. And he sat on the sidelines, got a couple PATs, kicked some balls out of the end zone, which we love to see that. And he came in within the final minute and kicked a game-winning 33-yarder. And so tremendous day by Will Reichert. His 2 for 2 was so much more than 2 for 2. If you could like put a star and an asterisk and sprinkles and glitter on that 2 for 2, that's what Will Reichert's 2 for 2 was on Saturday. James Burnup got a lot of practice, 6 punts for an average of just shy of 42, which is not terrible. Like it to sort of inch up there a little bit, but it's not terrible. He had a long of 50, and he had 3 inside the 20. Not that this would be Burnup's fault, but there were no blocks. There were no punt blocks, and so that's something that we saw. Alabama had a punt blocked a week ago, and so with 6 attempts, it was good to see that there were no punts blocked. And James Burnup, though, was really no Daniel Trejo for Texas, who I thought really had an outstanding game. He had a long of 61. He flipped the field a couple times. He really bottled up Kool-Aid on returns. And so, you know, you talk about a team that is not favored, that where they can play an equalizer style of game is in the is in special teams. And boy, Danny Trejo really attempted to do that. Saban, I thought, was – I'm glad that he called him out, because it's something, you know, fans should think about and pay attention. But Trejo, especially with that 61-yarder, really reversed, really flipped the field, put Alabama just in a pickle, and really bottled us up. And that put Texas in a really good sort of field position place. And again, the defense sort of stepped up and sort of helped us in that regard. But, you know, nonetheless, I want to call out their good performance. Not that I'm mad at Burnup at all, but Trejo certainly had a day. Will Anderson got his hand on a field goal in the half. we would have been happy just in that moment. We would have been happy to give them that three. Much later in the game, we were so glad they didn't have that three. And so that was a critical play in a tight game that's full of critical plays. That was one. Gibbs had, and we love Gibbs, and we've said a lot of nice things about Gibbs. Gibbs had 36 yards of kickoff returns, and I'm going to tell you that's the fakest number on the play sheet. That's the fakest number in the box score. I think if he had let both of those go, the team would have netted 50. And I'm just a proponent of let the ball go into the end zone. They'll let you fair catch it from anywhere now. Take it on the 25. That's just – I don't know how to say that any more plainly. And I don't understand why that isn't a thing. You still have the opportunity in a critical situation, or if you've practiced something and you see something, you want to take advantage of it. But on a play in, play out, it contributes to fake stats. And I guarantee you, I promise you this, if they clean that up, they're looking for how do we make these plays safer, stat them right, and you'll see a lot less of that. If Gibbs had a negative 14 yards on the kick return, and I'm not mad at Gibbs, I'm just saying any guy, if he had negative return yards, then they'd stop returning them. So that's just straight up the truth. All right, so again, not mad at Gibbs. He's electric. His value to the team is quite clear. And I just hated that there was a fake stat there in his numbers. Because his total numbers look like, holy cow, he had an incredible day, but 36 of them are fake. And that was maybe 20-ish percent of his overall production. So there you go. Next up, Louisiana Monroe. Yes, that Louisiana Monroe. Respectfully, this is a get-right game for Alabama. It's all about us. It's not about them. It's not about the Warhawks. I'm sorry, guys. But this game is about Alabama. Getting Alabama back at home after that Texas game where there's so many things that can be corrected easily that need to be corrected, and the players need to demonstrate that they can correct it. That's not where you want to catch a Nick Saban team. And so that's what the Warhawks have ahead of them. I think this Alabama offense needs to crack 40. Some of you will say 50. I will not disagree. I think we need to get Bryce off of – Bryce is the leading rusher for the team. We need to get his name off that list. We need to get the game off of Bryce's shoulder in a way that it was this last week. And we need to dial in the offensive line. And I think we know one change that we're going to see, and for my money, I would go ahead and make both of them, especially against these next couple of opponents. But we'll see what the Tide does on Saturday, what sort of rotations we may or may not see there. And the defense, you got to stop the penalties. We talked about 7 penalties on Texas scoring drives. You got to clean that up. You got to cut that in half. Penalties are going to be a part of the game. I'm not mad at that. But you got to cut that in half, especially on – and which is the cart and which is the horse? Is it, you know – I don't know. But you cut that number in half. And we talked about this a minute ago. I'm not trying to harp on it. I'm not trying to, you know, if and nuts and candy and whatever. But the reality is you dial back those 7 penalties and you start to, at some point, you start to dial back Texas scoring. And in a game that's a 1-point margin, you start taking points off the board for the other team. And it does miracles to the overall sort of complexion and flavor of the game. So we've got to stop the penalties. We've got to increase the quarterback pressures. And I think we're going to see that, not necessarily manufactured, like with a corner blitz. Who saw McKinstry having the first sack of the season? And but we've got to increase the quarterback pressure from just the straight set. And I think all of this starts to come together. And I know, you know, go Warhawks, but I know it's not that caliber of opponent as we saw last week against Texas. But we can see the team do the things, correct the things that had they done against Texas, which is eminently doable. It doesn't matter who your opponent is. Block the right guy on a wide receiver screen. I don't care who the guy is. Execute it the right way. Run the route. Sit down in the route when it calls for it. It doesn't matter who you're playing because you can do that against anybody. You could do that against an NFL team. But you as the individual have to do it. And so we can see improvement against this opponent in those areas. And I think that we will. I predict that this is a 42-10 style game. And I'll take more and give less if that's where we want to go with this. But right now, I'm looking at this as a 42-10 style game. And so with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.